Well, the scoreboard said I lost today, but what the scoreboard doesn't say is what it is I have found.
Back to the Tennis Connected Studios for June 11th, 2017. I'm Nima Naderi alongside Parsa Sammy, and we're here this week to wrap up Roland Garros for this season. Before we begin this week's show, let's introduce Parsa. How are you today, my friend?
Doing great. How are you?
Doing really well. You know, it's, let's start with this, Parsa. Tremendous result today that we had. Rafa Nadal winning his 10th title. That's not a mistake for once. I didn't make a mistake. So it's 10 titles for Rafa. Just an incredible effort that spanned, you know, all the way from 2005, when he was, I believe, 17, or what, 19, sorry. And, you know, now he's 31. And in the last 13 years, he's won 10 of the 13 tries that he's had at this event. So just, you know, a tremendous effort by him. And, you know, like, we're going to obviously get into a lot of the different dynamics in this match, where it leaves him now at 15 majors in the pantheon of great players and in the history of the game. But Parsa, you know, let's just get right into the match today. So we had a situation where Nadal's coming into this finals, hasn't lost a set, cruising the whole tournament. Like, he destroyed Dominic Thiem, who was the second best clay courter this season. He beat him, what was it, like 3-4 in love. Comes in today against Stan, who's has been before today 3-0 in Grand Slam finals, as everybody knows. You know, played an excellent tournament, didn't lose a set up until the semifinals, where he beat the current world number one, Andy Murray, in 5 sets, very convincing fashion in the 5th set. Comes into this match, you feel like he's feeling good, you know what I mean? He's got a little bit more variety than in Dominic Thiem. He's got a massive serve, you know, awesome ground strokes, a little bit more variation on his ground strokes, has the chip, you know, can volley a little bit as well, and he's beaten Nadal. At least, I believe, 3 times. So, I mean, even though it was very lopsided, 15-3, and now 16-3 for Nadal, you thought that Stan had a little bit of a chance to maybe at least win a set, you know, get Nadal sweating a little bit and seeing what would happen from there. But, I mean, still, it was a whitewash, right? It was 2-2 in the first set, and then Nadal broke for 4-2, and he held, broke for 4-2, and then basically it was realistically a runaway train from there. He cruised through the first set, won the second set 6-3, and then, you know, the third set it was 6-1. So it was nothing. Like, it was a completely comprehensive victory. He goes through this tournament. I believe it's the 3rd time now that he hasn't lost a set en route to the title. Wins his, let me go through some stats for us. Obviously, 10th Roland Garros, 73rd overall title, 53rd or 54th clay court title, his 4th of this year, he's number 1 in the race, back to number 2 in the actual, like, 52-week sliding calendar rankings. I mean, you know, you take it away from here. What did you think of this overall effort from Nadal, as well as today's match?
The number one thing I take away is 10. Nima, can you take more than 10 away from this entire event? I mean, what an incredible effort by him, and just something that I really can't quantify or put words to. I mean, yes. How many times have we watched Nadal, or how many times have we spoken about Nadal and said, he's done, he can't do this, he can't do that, and then look what he's done. I mean, have you ever seen, I have one question for you before I answer your question.
Yes.
Have you seen such a dominant slam performance that you can recall just on the top of your head?
I would say, for me, it's the match that he beat Federer before they had that epic in 2008 at Wimbledon. I think he beat him something like 4-1-0 or something like that at the French Open Finals. So when he was still wearing the sleeveless with the green and the khaki capris, and he had the long
hair.
Yeah,
and I mean entire tournament.
Like, he didn't lose a set. He didn't lose a set there either. He killed everybody. And so, but again, you know, that's 2008, right? That's 7 years ago. So, sorry, 9 years ago. You know what I'm saying? Like he was much younger back then. So for him to do it at 31, coming off of, you know, a poor year, let's be honest, last year was not good for Nadal. Come in this year and just cruise. And, you know, Parsa, I had put up a tweet right after, you know, Nadal had won. And I said, what I've always loved about Nadal is that he takes absolutely nothing for granted. And he's always played his tennis that way as well. I mean, obviously, I got, like, you know, numerous likes and retweets and all that. And the only reason I'm mentioning that is because that's really how I feel about the guy. And it was, like, that's exactly how he is, man. And even, you know, you look at the trophy ceremony, right? They brought out, like, an actual replica of it, not like the small ones that they usually give him, like a real big one. And Tony Nadal brought it out, who's been his coach since he was 3. And you can, like, these guys, man, are amazing to me because they have done so much in this game and they want no limelight. You know, they just want to get to work hard and go home. You saw Tony give him a trophy, want to get off the stage. Nadal's like, where are you going, man? Come share this moment with me for a second. We've worked our, you know, 30 years on this, right? And it's, you can just see that humbleness from Tony Nadal has completely, you know, transferred over to Rafa, and he's completely like that. And you can ask him right now, do you think you're the best player ever? He's going to say no. Like, he believes that, you know, he's not that good. He believes that he can still get better. He believes that there's people better than him. He believes that he can lose tomorrow. All of these things are always, those variables are always present with Nadal. And it's a very endearing thing. And because you look at this guy's an absolute warrior. You know, I've written him off before. So have you. So have thousands of people. And the guy just keeps coming back. And, you know, I thought about Robin Söderling today, ironically enough, because, you know, he beat Nadal in 2009 in the fourth round. And last year when Nadal was struggling and Federer was struggling and everybody was like, yeah, it's changing. And, you know, Djokovic and Murray were rolling everybody. And he said, listen, you know, champions like Nadal and Federer, they decide when they're done, not you or me or anybody else. And I mean, you know, you got to think that Söderling was right up there in terms of playing with these guys, and he beat all these guys too. Never won a major, but he was still up there. He knows what he's talking about, and you have to completely agree with that. And you can see it with Federer. Federer's turning 36 in August, man. The guy's number, like, he's, what did he do? He's so far this year, he's won the Australian Open, Miami, and Indian Wells. Coming in now, he's playing Stuttgart tomorrow. We'll get to that later in the show. These guys are not done. You know what I'm saying? Now, I want to get into a couple more layers of some of the theories that I have within this, but, you know, overall, you know, break down the match for us today, Parsa, and how you thought that Nadal just completely, you know, wiped the floor with Stan. Let's be honest. I mean, that's exactly what happened.
I mean, that's exactly what happened. And it just, it kind of, you know, so you, before the match, I wasn't sure.
Same here. Yeah.
You know, I maybe it's going to be heavier conditions. When I heard it's going to be 86 degrees, I go, uh-oh.
Yeah, that's trouble, man. Yeah.
There's trouble. I mean, that ball's going to be bouncing everywhere. And it literally was exactly like that. I mean, Stan just couldn't get a hold of the ball to actually hit it. So you saw him go through the two choices. One was to sit back and try to grind with him, which that was a disaster. And then the other thing he tried is to take the ball early, which it's just, with the defense that he plays, he couldn't get it through the court taking it early because he normally sets points up and then blasts it into the open court, and he just didn't have that ability to hit his setup shot, so it eliminated his power shot, and therefore he was rendered useless, and that's exactly how the score played out.
Yeah, and I mean, if you look at, you know, first serve points won, Nadal had 83% first serve points won. He got 65% of his first serves in. 65% of his second serve points he won, which is tremendous. He won 90% of his net points, 18 of 20, which is incredible. He broke serve 46% of the time, 6 for 13 on break points. Receiving points, he won 51%. So, I mean, there is some really, like, you know, you look at Nadal and you're like, oh, this guy's the king of clay. Obviously, he is. So you expect him to win. But, you know, if you look at some of the variables that allowed him to win this year, this is tremendous. I mean, look, the guy's returning like a champ. Second serve points won 65%. You know, he's serving bigger second serves. He said that that's, you know, thanks to Carlos Moya, who's one of his coaches now, along with Uncle Tony. And it's, I mean, great for Carlos for finally conveying that, because, you know, we've been talking about stuff like this now for years. since he won the U.S. Open back in 2010 or whatever it was when he was serving 140, 135. And, you know, obviously, like you said, that you wouldn't want to see his first serve percentage drop too much. But listen, on an outdoor clay court, he's serving 65% first serve percentage. That's pretty darn good, as we know. Anything over 60%, you're laughing, really. And he's winning 83% and then 65% of the second serves. Like, you know, one of my buddies, Peter Polanski, who's, you know, playing in the Challenger Tour now, he's, and I've talked to him about this, he rarely wins his second serve points more than 50%. He's always around 47, 48. And I told him, I said, listen, man, you're going to have to increase this if you want to get to that next level. And I talked to his coach about it, too, because we were just going back and forth with a couple of ideas. And that's what it really comes down to. I mean, if you're winning 65% of your second serve points, you're going to win that match. I mean, that's, you look at Stan, 44%. You're telling me Stan doesn't have a good serve? The guy who has a wicked serve. But, Nadal's obviously returning better, and he's serving better, so then you can really forget about it. And on top of everything, like you said, it's super lively conditions where the ball is flying everywhere, so you got really no chance. So for me now, Parsa, as we, you know, depart from France and we look to the grass courts at London, it's going to be interesting for me to see how Nadal rebounds. He's obviously going to chill for this next week. I'm not sure if he's going to go back to Mallorca, but I hope that he does, you know, decompress a little bit, do some fishing, and then, you know, get on the grass for next week when Queen's Club is starting. I believe he's in that, and then he's going
to... And there's a women's event there, by the way.
And what's that?
In Mallorca this week.
Yeah, in Mallorca, exactly, yeah. Azarenka is back for that one, so we'll talk about that in a bit. But yeah, I mean, he's, like, for me, it's just so much, like, interesting dynamics because he's done nothing on the grass now for a few years, right? Didn't play last year, and I believe the couple years before that, he's lost maybe first round, second round, and then he lost to Kyrgios. So he's done really nothing on grass for a long time. So, but now he's got the mojo, and now he's got the fitness, and he's got the confidence, and he's the French Open, reigning French Open champion, back to number two in the world. So I would be shocked if, just based on who he is and his problem-solving abilities, that he doesn't have a nice, you know, a deep run at Wimbledon this year, because, I mean, I would be really surprised if he doesn't.
You don't think it's going to be a Federer-Nadal final?
That would be awesome, but I mean, it really comes down.
Doesn't it kind of have to be?
It would be cool because you would have the first two winners of this year's majors facing off yet again in a very retro type of environment, at match, and I mean, we got a long way to go still. You know, we got another month basically until that tournament, three and a half weeks till Wimbledon starts. So let's think about what's happening at the moment. But when you look at everybody else that took place in this, I like what Stan's doing. You know, he won in Geneva last week, got all the way to the finals here. So you know he's going to be feeling good. Just hired Paul Anacone as his grass court coach, consultant. He's going to be alongside Magnus Norman. So you know that these guys, they know that they've won the other three majors. What do we need to do to get, you know, really going on the grass? And I think it's always going to be a tough ask for Stan because his strokes are not very conducive to the grass. But again, if he can get in a little bit, he's not the quickest guy either, right? He's a very strong, potent guy, and you have to be very nimble and agile to do well on grass, and that's not really his game. It's more about brute force and a little bit of touch, but more than anything, just, you know, blow through all these guys. A lot of angles from the baseline. You really don't see that on the grass. One of his saviors, I will say, is that the grass is slower now. So it gives a player like Stan the ability to develop points on the surface, as opposed to, you know, when Sampras and Ruzeski and Philippoussis were playing, you know, 10, 20 years ago. So
I was just going to say, I wonder if they'll follow the tune of the Australian and speed up the courts at Wimbledon. What do you think?
Well, they might, but whatever they've done, they've already done it for this year, right? So it's not something that they're going to implement, like, right now for a couple weeks from now. So, again, I don't know what they have in the cards, but from what I've heard, it's pretty much the same thing as last year.
So yeah, I wonder if it's like golf, you know, if you cut the blades shorter or longer, you know, that does affect the speed of greens in golf. I've never really looked into grass courts and their actual
What it really comes down to is the rye that they use for the grass, and that determines the speed of the surface, from what I understand. Yeah. So we'll see what happens with SW19 in a few weeks. But so we talked about Rafa, we talked about Stan, we got to talk about Djokovic. you know, he was the defending champ, and he went down in very meek fashion to Dominic Thiem, who got destroyed by Nadal in the next round. And I mean, it was kind of reminiscent of Nadal a few years back. Remember, he was coming in, and Djokovic was hot, and you know, then Djokovic beat him easily in the quarters, and then you know, Stan beat him in 2015, beat Djokovic in the finals. But you know, you saw Nadal in that third set, if you remember, Parsa, where he was wearing that all blue outfit, and he was like, he just wanted to get off the court. He lost 6-1 in the third. He double faulted on match point, and you know, Djokovic was just rolling through the clay court season, and Nadal was having poor results. And it's the same, very similar here. You know what I mean? As the reverse, where Nadal's coming in cruising, feeling strong, and Djokovic not feeling it, even though he showed obviously better form than Nadal did that year. Made the finals of Rome and, you know, had some impressive results in Paris. But, I mean, just to go down that meekly to Dominic Thiem 6-0 in the third set as the defending champion, like, he really did not look like he wanted to be there. And it was sad, really. I mean, you got such a great champion as Djokovic, and you want to see him at his best. And, you know, we talked about the Agassi factor, and I don't think that Agassi is going to be at Wimbledon. I've heard rumors that there's another guy gonna, you know, another coach that's going to be joining the team. I heard from some sources in Paris that it might be Ivan Isevich. As you know, Berdych is not with Ivan Isevich anymore. I would see that as a very, you know, a lot of too many cooks in the kitchen, because you have Goran, you have Agassi, you have, you know what I mean. I don't know if they need somebody that big in terms of star power, but needless to say, you're going to have somebody joining along, because if Agassi's not going to be there only on from a phone perspective, that's great, but it's not exactly what he needs at this stage. So I don't know. What are your thoughts overall on Nole and what can he do to rebound at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, he went into some sort of drama mode or shock therapy or whatever, and didn't really seem to work, because the shock was probably to the rest of his team. But for him, you know, he's got something that's just deep-rooted, or something that needs to be worked out. He's clearly lost the fire from inside to continue to push to be the best. You know, he's still one of the best players in the world. He always will be, because his talent is that way, and he's got all that experience. But to be the number one best is a whole different animal. Mm-hmm. And you heard Sampras in the past talk about how difficult it is to be number one, and how difficult and daunting it is to always have everyone always play the best match of their life, or attempt to make a career out of playing you. And I think that's a very important thing, that it sometimes causes some serious burnout, because you're constantly under fire and under pressure, and everyone you play, it's the match of their life. So it's something that's definitely can be daunting on somebody, like I was saying earlier, and something that I think he may need a little bit of time, Nima, and I think the microscope of the world looking at him is sort of dangerous. You know, it's we're here talking about him instead of, you know, maybe he needs to just take a break, a hiatus, but obviously there's ranking points and endorsements and money, and there's a lot of things involved to that, and he's definitely in sort of a midlife crisis mode as an athlete, and
yes,
this time will pass, though. If he can survive it, this time will pass, and he will be back, because he's just too good. So, we'll see how long this period will last, but I'm very, very confident he'll snap out of it.
Yeah, and he's down to number 4 in the world as of tomorrow. His lowest ranking since 2009. So quite a while. He hasn't been at least at number 4. So it's going to be interesting for him, but really doesn't affect too much in terms of the seedings, because he still will play a top 4 seed in the semis, where he would be 1 through 4. So it doesn't, you know, it's not a tremendous difference. But yeah, it's, and you can see, you know, you're talking about the daunting task of being number one, and, you know, everybody playing the match of their lives, and Murray's experiencing that now. You know what I mean? And he hasn't, to be honest, handled it well at all. You know what I mean? Everybody's going after him, left, right, and center. He had Fognini play the match of his life to beat him in Rome, and you know what I mean? Like, Stan was motivated to take him out in Paris, even though Murray was playing well. But I will say this, that from, I think, you know, Murray's French Open will bode well for him on the grass. Because, you know, he made the semis coming in, and just to quote him, he was playing like garbage. That's exactly what he said. And so for him to come make the semis and very nearly beat Stan, I mean, he was in the fourth set breaker there. He wins that match. He's in the finals today against Rafa. You know what I mean? I still don't think he's going to win today, but he's still going to be a French Open finalist for, what is it, the third year in a row, or second, third year in a row. So it's, I mean, now he moves to the grass. He's going to be in Queens next week and then get ready for to defend his Wimbledon title and then off to the hard court. So, you know, Murray's got a lot on his plate now for the basically the remainder of the year. He's got tons of points to defend, so he can't really, you know, blink too much from now until December when the World Tour Finals have ended. So it's a perfect time for, you know who, Parsa, to make his entrance back into the world of tennis, and that's Mr. Roger Federer. Saw some really cool footage of him practicing today in Stuttgart. He's playing with Tommy Haas, who he subsequently could face in the second round. And just really cool, man. Just see him back there. And you know, he's got a new haircut. He's a little bit more aerodynamic now. And he's just out there. He looked very strong. Legs were cut. You know, he's looking like he's ready to go, Parsa. And if he's ready to go, and you know, he hasn't played a match since March, man. We're in June now. You know what I'm saying? So there will be a little bit of that rust. But I think he's going to be okay, and I would be surprised if he doesn't win this week in Stuttgart. So like I said, I mean, it's a great time of year because we have Federer coming back, Nadal's back at top form, and then you got guys like Murray and Djokovic who are, you know, ranked number 1 and 4 in the world respectively, but they're trying to, you know, raise their level again. And then you got a guy like Wawrinka who's won, you know, 3 slams. He really wants Wimbledon to complete his package. He's doing everything he can, hiring guys like, you know, Paul Anacombe. Then you have guys like Alex Zverev, who lost early at Wimbledon. You know he's going to, pardon me, early at the French. You know he's going to want to do something at Wimbledon. And then finally, a guy like Dominic Thiem, who, again, like a Wawrinka, probably grasses his worst surface based on his, you know, stroke production and his backswings. But again, he's a competitor, and he's a workhorse, and you know he's going to be ready to go for the grass court season. So we got about 6 or 7 guys, I think, in the mix from an interesting, you know, from what you can follow them standpoint. And I think overall that the grass is going to be awesome. And, you know, we'll see how that transpires. You have any closing thoughts on the men's before we jump into the women's here?
You know, not much other than, you know, it kind of went to form, to be honest, as incredible as it is. And it came to fruition.
Yes.
It sort of happened as we expected it. So,
yes.
You know, I had Stan in the final. I mean, he got to the final.
Yeah, yeah, we both had the same finalists, for sure.
Yeah, we both, you know, we sort of knew it was coming, which Stan wasn't a sure pick, but Nadal kind of absolutely was. So, you know, me, you, alongside with probably 98% of tennis fans picked Nadal to win the French. So, no surprise there, but still great to see history and in such a dominant fashion and some changes to his game, you know, really, really interesting to observe, and love having Rafa at the top again.
Yeah, and something you had mentioned before we got on air was the GOAT debate. Okay, so now you have Nadal, you know, at 15 slams, 10 French Opens. He's won all the majors. So has Federer. Federer's at 18. And you think about it, right? Like, you know, Nadal was about 20 minutes away, 15, 20 minutes away from owning both of the Grand Slams this year. He would be halfway towards, you know, a calendar slam, because he was up 3-1, I believe 30-all or 30-love against Federer in the 5th set of the Australian Open to lose 6-3. So, I mean, it was not like he got destroyed there, right? Like, he very nearly won that tournament too. So, if he had won that, Federer would be at, what, at 17? Nadal would have been at 16. Now, you know, ifs and whatever don't mean anything in this world, as we know. So, you know, Nadal currently stands at 15. And then we have Federer at 18 and Djokovic at 12. Everybody's still playing, as we know. Fed's getting towards the end, but he said he wants to play till he's 40. So let's say he can win another Wimbledon, he's going to be at 19. You know, it's going to be, I think, a tough task for either Djokovic or Nadal to catch that number, to be honest. You have the variables that, you know,
unless they play to 40.
But I don't think Nadal can. I just think that he's only 30. That's 9 years away, right? So again, who knows? Who really knows? But you would have to think that that's probably not going to happen. It's a tough one for me. I say today, if today all three of them retired, Federer for sure is the greatest of all time. I think if Nadal can get more slams, for me at this point, it's whoever can get more majors. That's my barometer for who I consider the greatest of all time, because all of these guys, the three of them, with Djokovic, Nadal, and Federer, they've all won tons of tournaments, tons of Masters. They've all defeated each other. They've all went on amazing streaks at one point or another. You know, how many, what is it? He's won 6 Australian Opens, Djokovic. You know, Federer's won 7 Wimbledons. Nadal's won 10 French Opens. I mean, they've all had their slam that they've dominated more than the other guys. And none of them are easy. I still think that the French is the toughest tournament to win. So there's got to be something there for Rafa. Rafa's completely dominated Federer, even though he's lost the last 4. And if you take clay out of the equation, which is really not fair in my opinion, you know, Federer's right there with him. Djokovic, I mean, he's been up until this year, he was cruising over both these guys. He was destroying both of them in big matches. So you got to put something there for Noel. But there's a lot of stuff. I mean, you know, what's your take on that? Like I said, I mean, as of here and today, you got to give Fed the nod. With obviously Nadal second and Djokovic third, just based, you know, merely on slam victories and statistics, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's a, you know, here's the argument in my head. So, you know, obviously the GOAT kind of has to be Federer overall because the number of tournaments, but 10 in one place, Ima?
Yeah, it's next level, yeah.
That's just utter dominance. I mean, and then they went through it at the end of the French there, and like who he beat and who he defeated, and it was number one Federer, I think 4 times while Federer was at the very peak of his game, which was the insane Federer magician type guy, and this guy's coming over and slaying him with topspin, you know, just pretty incredible stuff. You know, the competition wasn't weak or hasn't been weak in his 10 victories, as it hasn't been for Djokovic, to be honest with you. He's always had to play one of the best in the world, one of these GOAT type of players, in order to upend and win. So, you know, for me right now, it's still Federer, but can those guys catch up? I say, why not? You know, Fed won one in the last little bit here, last 3 years or so, and I guess the same for Nadal now. So who knows at what pace these guys are going to continue to win slams. You know, if they get 1 more or 2 more, I think it would be a good effort. The thing is though, like if Rafa plays 5 more Frenches, who's gonna really beat him? And I mean, he can win the French just 5 more times alone. So you know, that's where I'm uncertain, and you know, it's really gonna be an injury that's gonna hold him back. You know, and we don't know how that's all gonna unfold, but I do think it is possible.
I would be, to be completely honest with you, I would think Fed has, if he can win 2 more slams, for me, that would be just incredible. Really would. I mean, if he can get to 20, I think that would pretty much notch, you know, lock him up. I think Nadal has 2 more slams in him, personally. I think he gets to max 17. Djokovic, wild card at this point. I mean, based on talent alone. I mean, it's interesting because, you know, Federer is older. That's his only knock, really, but his game is amazing right now. If Nadal can start to return better on faster services and hit bigger second serves, that completely changes everything, because the biggest dynamic that we saw, Parsa, throughout the last couple of years was, in a rally situation, Nadal and Djokovic were pretty good. You know, I mean, more or less even. They had strengths and weaknesses together, but Djokovic was serving better and obviously returning better. Now, if Nadal can kind of close that gap a little bit through whatever magic Moya and Uncle Tony can put together, I mean, then that's a different story for me. But I think if you're going to ask me right here and today, what's this all going to end up like when these three guys retire? I'm going Fed 19 slams. I'm going Nadal 17. I'm going Djokovic 15, maybe 16. That's what I'm going with right now. So that's, again, that's just my opinion. I mean, I could be completely off. I could be completely on. But that's what I'm going with right now. And then Murray, I mean, obviously at 3, which is still tremendous. He's a Hall of Famer. He's not going to get anywhere near, you know, even 8. He's not going to win another 5 at this stage. So unless something crazy happens. And then Stan, maybe he wins another one. And then I think you're going to start seeing, you know, some younger guys come in and do some magic here. But it's amazing. I mean, once again, look at the dominance of just these big 4 or 5 guys. They still win everything. You know what I mean? Like, you see a couple blips like Cilic's and, you know, Del Potro and, Like, but more otherwise, it's always going to be Nadal, Federer, Djokovic, or Murray. They're always winning the big titles, and it's just, it's tremendous how good these four guys have been, especially Djokovic, Federer, and Nadal. So we'll see. I mean, I think it's going to be an amazing year. I'm really looking forward, actually. I mean, I'm really looking forward to Wimbledon, but even more so the summer hard court season. I think you're going to see some really good tennis there, and it's the neutral surface, and you're going to see everybody, you know, very even playing field, and it's going to be some awesome tennis leading into NYC. So, Parsa, we've, you know, we spent obviously a lot of time on the men's side. Got to get into the women's, which was another tremendous effort from 20-year-old, recently 20-year-old, just a few days ago, Yelena Ostapenko, who took out Halep in three sets, down a set 3-1. I mean, what was it, 3-1, 4-love, four, whatever it was, and she comes back, she wins the tournament, down 3-1 in the third set as well, too. You know, beat a slew of really good players like Stozer and Monica Puig and Baczynski, and I mean, just rolling at Wozniacki. I mean, this, she's a player. And for me, Parsa, what will always stand out to me was she was obviously happy when she won, but it wasn't that big of a deal to her. She's like, yeah, so I'm supposed to win this tournament. You know what I'm saying? Like, it, and that for me as a 20-year-old, we have to obviously say with Serena Williams absent, you're going to see these type of things happening because there's other than her, you cannot say there's any other clear-cut favorite in the women's side on all four surfaces.
I agree. I mean, yeah. And with Ostapenko, it's a tremendous result. I mean, you can see her enthusiasm, but it wasn't disbelief type enthusiasm.
Not at all.
Rock on, like, I'm going to win this thing right now type enthusiasm, which is very different than, I can't believe I'm here. You know,
yeah.
It's definitely one of those types of things where she expects herself to be in these positions. She trains for this, and it sort of was like, yeah, and I dreamt about it. I've been working my whole life towards it, and it's happening. Well, you know, this is really cool. This is awesome. Let's scream primally, scream out there, but let's get at it again. There's no doubt that this one will be coming back and trying to make some noise on the big stage.
Yeah, and do you see Ostapenko having more, like, you know, we've seen players like Ivanovic, you know, come win a French, pretty much didn't do anything after that. Even Maioli, you know, another blast from the past. Is Ostapenko different, in your opinion? I mean, she's got a very feast or famine game. And I think when some, you know, other players, because she's fresh, you know what I mean? Not everybody knows her. Still only 20, even though she's been around for a couple of years. Does she have the type of game that with some varying, like even with Halep, I mean, Halep, this didn't really have a lot of variety in her arsenal that day to defeat her yesterday. And I mean, if somebody gives her some low slices, some loopy shots, will she still be able to just go, listen, I'm just going to tee off, whatever, big serves, everything massive, you know, litter up the, you know, the stat sheet, tons of winners, tons of unforced errors, whatever, double faults, but I'm going to control it, which I respect. Because the match was completely in her hand, right? She's going to miss or she's going to make it. To her credit, she made more than she missed. And she wins, you know, her first tournament ever, let alone a Grand Slam. So, which is another amazing thing. But is this something that can be dealt with, you know, from the other players on the WTA after they've, you know, got the videos now, they've looked over what she's done. They're like, okay, this is how we're going to go about this and defeat this player from now on.
I was going to say, I mean, it remains to be seen. Because, you know, you have to find on the different surfaces how she can be broken down. And so it'll be interesting to see how the rest of the year plays out. With many people now watching her play, it reminds me of Eugenie Bouchard, except that Bouchard was very one-dimensional in her game. And so is Ostapenko, but Ostapenko has a little bit more wiggle room behind the baseline. She's not hugging it so much.
Yes.
And can do a couple of different things and change direction a couple different ways. And so I think that
I think she hits bigger too.
She hits bigger, and I think that she can grow and mature. Hopefully, she doesn't get lost in all the hoopla and continues to be who she acted like when she won. You know, and the workman and the professional that seems like she is, and just awesome to have a new face and exciting. She's, you know, imagine those balls go in more than they go out. She's going to be around for a very long time.
Yeah, and I'd like to see her play on hard court, even on grass. I mean, that's going to be interesting to see how all of this transpires. one of our listeners, Parsa Ahmed, he had emailed me and asked, you know, he said that he really enjoyed, you know, the WTA side of this event in Paris. And he said that especially from the fourth round onwards, he thought that, you know, it was some really cool matches. And most of the favorites did last towards the latter, you know, stage of the event. But he said that it's still without a doubt that, you know, the likes of Sharapova and the Williams sisters and Kvitova and Azarenka, you know, were missing to a certain degree. And, you know, with them back in the mix, obviously Serena won't be back until early next year, we hope. And Sharapova will not, unfortunately, be, you know, taking part in the grass court season because of a muscle tear. So she'll look to get back, I believe, in Stanford as her next event. But there's no doubt, in his opinion, that with those players present, you're going to get much more TV coverage as well as, you know, viewership. And I really can't disagree with that. I mean, because even a player like Ostapenko, I mean, I don't think a lot of people still know who she is. She just won the French Open, right? Because she came completely out of nowhere, kind of like Guga did back in 97, right? Saw this colorful guy come up, beat all these former champions. And, you know, then obviously he went on a run from there. You know what I mean? Started to have some results, ended up with 3 French Opens, and now he's going to be remembered forever alongside his wonderful personality. But when you look at the WTA currently, because, you know, the likes of Azarenka, who will be back this week in Mallorca, and then you have Kvitova, who we're very happy to see back in the French. She's, you know, dynamite on the grass. She's a former 2-time winner at Wimbledon, so let's see how she does. Sharapova, as I mentioned, will not be there. Serena will not be there. But then Venus. Venus will be there. And, you know, Venus's best surface is grass. And, I mean, who knows? I'm going to be pulling for her. I mean, I hope she can do some damage on the grass this year and pick up a Grand Slam title in absence of her, you know, more successful younger sister, let's be honest. I think that would be a fantastic story for her and just everything that she's gone through and her perseverance. And she's the highest-ranked women's player right now in the world at the age of 36, 37. So you got to give her a ton of credit. And so just overall, how do you see the women's dynamic, Parsa, as we shift over to the grass? And, you know, as we look at, you know, the Coco Vandeweghes and the Madison Keys and, you know, some of the other players that we're going to be, you know, have some eyes on as we move forward. How's that going to look when we enter the grass as of tomorrow?
Yeah, I think that, you know, as the year goes on, I think we're going to shift into a new dimension of the women's game. I think you're going to get some of the old guard coming back into play and
yes,
some of the new guards still trying to establish themselves and elbow themselves to the top of the chain.
Okay.
You know, so again, you know, I'm not a big fan of star power, but I would like some star power and some consistency a little bit. You know, at least that there can be one person enough to be a villain or one person enough to be a great champion or whatever it is. Right now we're in sort of an influx on the WTA tour, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but I would love for Ostapenko to come out and have a big Wimbledon and you know, she doesn't have to win it, but put herself in the semis or something and sort yes, of back up Roland Garros would be an incredible result and something incredible to see. At the same time, you know, Halep is playing very strongly. I'm not sure how that's going to translate over. And the Cocos and the Madisons of the world, I mean, for them, you know, I think a large part of what they do on a daily habit or, you know, routine is a large part of what affects the different types of players that they end up losing to. It's always like a slight change in the style and that deters. And so having that flexibility as those level players, the let's say the 10 to 20 ranked type players, they need that flexibility to be able to adapt to different styles of play. And every Grand Slam, they sort of run into somebody who can counter what they do very well. And then they're stuck playing with their B-level stuff and they can lose. So, you know, I'm not sure how much that's going to change until they make a change. Does that make sense to you, man?
Yeah, it doesn't, but it's interesting that you say that because when I look at Ostapenko, I don't see any difference between really what she's doing and what Madison Keys or Coco Vandeweghe can do. You know, you got all players with big serves, big ground strokes, very fluid, very athletic girls, right? But you have Ostapenko at the age of 20, who's younger than both of He's in Coco as an example, and she's won a major, and they haven't, right? So you look at the disturbance, and I know what you're talking about. Like, I saw Madison Keys lose out, you know, and against Matrick, I believe her name was. She She's actually a player who is working at the Alexander Wasky Tennis University now. She qualified. She had an amazing tournament. But, you know, she used some variations, some slices, and it took her off of her game. But that wasn't bothering Ostapenko this tournament. She played a lot of different types of players, and she beat everybody, right? So it's, to me, is it kind of like you're not going to take no for an answer and stay focused and stay, you know, very, have great willpower and get through this? Or is it also she didn't know better because she's young and it's kind of like just swing for the fences and hope for the best and the best came forward? It's weird, you know what I'm saying? Because when I'm looking at it from a game perspective, I see a lot of players, generally speaking, the WTA, there's not a lot of margin on player strokes. You have a few, like Stozer's got a nice kicker, and you know Serena can do some different things, obviously, because of her greatness. But for the most part, you have so many, you know, heavy, flat hitters of the ball that they're playing a very same-dimensional type of game, right? So when you have a situation like Ostapenko, who can just, you know, hit bullets all over the place, well, so can Madison Keys. How come she can't win this tournament? Or how come she hasn't won a slam? Or same with Coco Vandeweghe, or, you know, other players like that. So, I, for me, that's kind of what I'm struggling with. Like, why did this happen and it hasn't happened for somebody else? But, again, I guess, you know, she had it going for her throughout the fortnight and it paid off.
A good point that you're making. You know, it's, so maybe it is playing your dimension that much better. But yes, at the same time, you know, to what I was trying to say is no matter what was thrown at her, she had an answer for, you know, and I think that's where that next level work needs to be done in your strengths, right? Of course, winning is about playing to your strengths more than your opponent is able to play to their strengths. And so, you know, that's obviously what she did very, very well against Halep, against Bashinsky, against Stozer. There are some great players in there and great champions, and she was able to really impart her style of game and make those ladies play her style of game, and that's very, very important. Sometimes, you know, for example, in the men's final, you saw Stan trying to almost play Nadal's game at one point because he had no solution, no answer.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's all I'm looking for more so on the women's side is somebody who can have a game that translates to surfaces and translates to different styles.
Yeah, and I think, again, I don't know how much we're going to be able to get that, but nevertheless, I think you might see some wacky stuff happen at Wimbledon unless somebody like Venus can, you know, resurrect her grass court, you know, greatness from, you know, earlier on in her career and perhaps prevail. So, Parsa, let's, you know, end off the show with just a quick preview of the Stuttgart draw as Federer is back. So I think a lot of people would like to hear what we think is going to happen. Fed is the number one seed with Dimitrov as the number two seed. It's obviously a very compact field of, looks like, 28 players. Top four seeds have a bye. Other seeds are Burdick at three, who's coachless at the moment. He got rid of Ivanisevic. And Lucas Pouille, who made quarters of Wimbledon last year. He's got a very nice all-court game. We're talking about all-court games. There's a guy who definitely has one. Fed will likely play Tommy Haas in the second round, his really good buddy. Other than that, you got Misha Zverev, who's back on stuff that he loves, grass courts. Watch out for him, man. He could be a sleeper to make maybe, you know, the fourth round, even quarters of Wimbledon. I mean, he loves to serve and volley. He's feeling good. He won a few matches more than he thought he was going to on the clay. I'm pretty sure he thought he was going to win no matches, but he won, you know, at least a handful, which was great throughout the... He played almost every week as well. And then we have, going to the bottom half, we have Steve Johnson, who, you know, what he's gone through, he's going to be back on a service that he favors. And got Bagdadis, who's played really well on grass in the early stages of his career. We have Cole Schreiber, who plays well on everything, another very versatile guy, but he plays, you know, more so well on grass. He's a good grass courter as well. You know, Struff, who can do some damage here. I mentioned Pouille, Troitsky, who's good on grass. Yanovich is using his protective ranking to play here, and then Dimitrov. So looking at this right now, I'm going Fed to make the finals. Feliciano Lopez is there too, so that's another guy. I think Fed will have a tough draw. I mean, you could potentially have Haas, Misha Zverev, Feliciano Lopez, and then, you know, like a guy like maybe Dimitrov or Lucas Pouille. I don't think Dimitrov's going to do it. I think he's going back into the funk mode, to be honest with you, for a bit. Maybe he'll come around during the hard court season, but I'm really not sure with him. I mean, I hope not, because he's good for the game and he's got tons of fans. But I'm thinking we're going to see something like, you know, a Federer-Lucas Pouille final with Fed winning straight sets, something like 7-5, 6-4.
I absolutely love it, but at the same time, I think he could be a little rusty, you know.
He's going to be rusty, but he's still...
Misha Zverev in the second round there.
Yeah. There would be Haas in the second round.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Well, I meant in his second round.
Yeah.
You know, and that's where, you know, you can get something like that where it could be weird because it's going to challenge your returns, and you haven't hit a lot of returns in the last 3 months.
He's going to be in on everything, yeah.
You know, so he could lose or win, but I think it's just great to see him out there. And, you know, if I had to guess, of course I'm going to take Federer. Exactly. You know, somebody like Johnson, somebody like Cole Schreiber, who's a great grass courter, could come through there. Lucas Pouille, of course. You know, even Dimitrov can make a run. Just depends where his head is at. But
yes.
You know, it's just great to have Federer back and hopefully in the win column.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, guys. So Parsa and I will be back in a few weeks' time, about two and a half weeks, to preview Wimbledon. The third Grand Slam of the season. We're really looking forward to that. In the meantime, you can follow Parsa at Parsa Sammy, myself at Tennis Connected. You can also follow Tennis Connected on our Instagram page, our Facebook page, our Twitter page, as well as tennisconnected.com. I believe we'll have some great articles coming up this week by Charles and Steve and Ben to wrap up the French, and looking forward to the grass court season. As well, for anybody looking to still get down to Wimbledon because you have a few weeks, make sure to hit up Grand Slam Tennis Tours for all your ticket and traveling needs. And then obviously after that for the U.S. Open. Parsa, thank you very much for joining us today. Thanks everybody out there for listening. Be good, enjoy the grass court warm-ups, and we'll be back to join you for a Wimbledon preview.